refried beans and nachos. What else has been on the menu today?
We did a pork nacho today with sour cream, salsa. We had a pasta.
I'm David Baker, and this is Default World. Along with producer Peter Snowden, I've been looking at how Silicon Valley is shaping a new global identity, using the internet to spread its values across the world. Plenty of people have become extraordinarily rich chasing this dream. But not everyone has benefited in the same way from the wealth that Silicon Valley has created. Just a few blocks from San Francisco's bustling financial district is Glide, a church that caters for those left behind. Glide is run by Janice Mirikitani and her husband Cecil Williams, a legendary figure in San Francisco's civil rights movement.
With the technology companies coming in and millionaires being able to afford to create and build condos and to create housing that is much more expensive, it has just raised every part of the cost of living. We serve 900,000 meals a year. And in our lines, we've seen in the past many more homeless, many more people who were truly on the edge, mentally ill. Well, we're still seeing them, but now we're seeing an influx of working class people. People who have jobs are also in our lines because they cannot make ends meet. So what we're seeing is this gigantic economic gap, but again, the challenge to the diversity that we have been so richly known for.
Okay, but the city has always had millionaires. Are these millionaires behaving in some sort of different way then?
Yes. They're making the money real fast, number one. It comes. And in that process, I think it sets a mindset for people who work to create new things and to make things work for them. But in that, they have not done technical stuff for us, for those of us who have been living here, who have been working here, working with groups who need our help and need to be understood and working in ways that would help create a new community rather than a community that is stretching.
They're an ingenious community. They're always looking for something new to make humankind better. I mean, I believe that they share the values that we espouse, which is social justice, a better environment for everybody. But then if you're part of creating an environment that isn't better for everybody, then what do you do about that? So even though we have very many friends in the tech communities, Google, Twitter, Zynga, mostly it's through the volunteer efforts. And that's very hopeful because they come and they see us as human beings. They come and they see the people that they perhaps dislike who are in the streets begging and so forth. And I think that Glide can be a bridge, hopefully, for better understanding and saying, okay, if you believe in social justice, if you believe in equalizing the ground, then help us find ways in which that ground can be found and created with us, not for us. Because I think we need to mutually understand each other as human beings and what our differences are.
Don't hand us crumbs from your table. You know, we don't like crumbs. We would like to get loaves of bread. What we really like is something open and progressive that would really count for all of us.
If the people who are in technology want to change the world for the better, great. But it would be really nice for them to look in their backyard and to say, can we start here?
Your backyard neighbors are calling on you. Knock, 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 knock. Open the door.
The people at Glide recognize that Silicon Valley citizens are not heartless capitalists. They care about the poor. But their solutions are not redistribution, but individual and corporate philanthropy. And they very much believe that individuals can better themselves through their own actions. This is a very distinct vision, and one that's creating profound changes in the world of work and business.
One thing that's happened more in North America than in the UK at the moment is in the area of personal services, tasks, deliveries, and that kind of thing. So all these kind of personal trades, if you like, have been increasingly aggregated into these on-demand platforms.
Tom Slee is an Ontario-based technologist who is critical of the effects Silicon Valley companies are having on the way many of us work, turning us from wage slaves into entrepreneurs.
This has very quickly turned into another way of creating jobs that don't have benefits. the big change it makes is that from the company's point of view, it offloads a lot of risk, it offloads a lot of expenses onto the people doing the work.
But I guess someone in Silicon Valley would say, bring it on. You know, we love entrepreneurship. We love people who are go-getting. We love people who can make something of their life from their labor. You know, let's give more and more people that chance. What's the problem with that?
That's exactly what they'd say, and they have a word for it. They tend to call the people on their platforms micro-entrepreneurs, the idea being that, you know, hey, you might not be building a big business, but you're taking charge of your life. You're a self-managed, self-directed person. I think what's happened in practice, that notion of personal control over your own time and your own activities, it's much, much less than was promised. What they've done is they've put all the risk down onto these micro-entrepreneurs, but they have very little chance of making any money out of it. You can't build a business out of what they're doing there.
And it's not just workers they're affecting. Tom Slee has made a particular study of the effect companies like Airbnb are having on cities around the world.
The problem with that is they're delivering a service by being parasitic on the cities in which they run. So they're avoiding all kinds of costs. They're avoiding insurance costs. They're avoiding taxation costs. It may work in the short term for the consumer, but it's a bad thing in the long term for cities. Airbnb is a site where people can share a room in their house or share their houses from time to time. What happens when that scales up, as it does in many large tourist cities? You get an uncontrolled influx of tourists, and the city is unable to balance the interests of tourism with other interests in their city because it's completely taken out of their control by Airbnb.
We've come to Barcelona, Spain. Every year, 7 million visitors come to this city, and many of them flock here to La Boqueria food market, just off Barcelona's famous Las Ramblas, to marvel at the amazing variety of food and drink on sale here. But now a row is brewing in this city between Airbnb and the city authorities. Barcelona is Airbnb's third biggest city in Europe and in its top five in the world. There are more than 18,000 listings on Airbnb's site for this place, and this is a city with a population of 1.6 million people. This has caused quite a lot of tension. There are plenty of people here doing well out of the explosion of Airbnb in the city, but as we'll see, there are others who say the company is having a detrimental effect. It's a really nice blue sky, crisp morning here, and an area of the city called Poble Sec, which is just outside the centre. It's a residential area, but a place that's seeing more and more tourists coming to stay here thanks to a rise in Airbnb rentals. The street we're in is a rather lovely, old-style, probably 19th century street, quite narrow. The apartment buildings are about 6 or 7 stories high. And we're going to see a guy called Jacques, who has an apartment here which he rents out on Airbnb. And we're going to discover why he's an Airbnb host and what effect Airbnb is having on this particular part of the city.
How are you?
You must be Jack. Hi, welcome.
How are you?
Thank you. Thank you.
How was your travel?
Yeah, all good, thank you. This is the place.
This is the building. It's number 30.
Okay.
So I show you how to open the door.
Okay. Oh, this is lovely. Lovely, clear. It's an old apartment which has been made modern, I think. You've done a lot of work on this, I think.
Yes, we need to repair a little bit.
Okay.
Introducing
the
apartment.
Tour, yeah.
Okay, so you can come here. I'm from Italy. I'm originally from Rome, but I live in Barcelona from 8 years.
What's so good about being an Airbnb host? Why are you an Airbnb host?
Well, because we especially like travel. So we know the important things is going in an apartment instead of an hotel. I'm working in tourism. My wife is an architect, so we mix the two things and we create our apartment to rent for another guest.
And this apartment we're in, did you buy this especially to make it an Airbnb apartment?
Yes, we bought the apartment especially to create like a small business to help our family.
Is this your main job, being an Airbnb host, or is it a small part of your work?
Well, I started like a part-time, but now it's like my job. So with this apartment, it helped me to improve my salary.
What do you think the effect is of Airbnb on the city of Barcelona? Some people say it's having a negative effect here.
Well, in some place like Barceloneta, in the city centre, maybe could be negative because all the apartments are just for tourists. But like in the area where we are in Poble Sec, that is not in the old town exactly, it can help the local shops to improve, to have another clients. It helps the city.
But not everyone is so sure. We've come to the city hall in the heart of Barcelona's old town to hear how the authorities are trying to slow the growth of Airbnb in this city. I'm going to talk to Agustí Colom, the councillor in charge of tourism here.
Many of these apartments are concentrated in a small area, and what we are seeing is an increase in their rentals. As a result, neighbours are being forced to leave their places as rents are being increased, and that they cannot pay. We need to look at the city as a whole. We don't want a city that is a monoculture. Airbnb have shown us that they are committed to help, and I am hopeful that Barcelona will reach an agreement.
We've come to Barceloneta. It's the early evening and a lot of people have left work, and in this big square they're sitting around having a drink. There are children playing in the playground in the middle, people wandering around catching up on the day. And this is traditionally a poorer area of Barcelona, but it's an area where Airbnb is really making an impact. And we're here to see what the locals think about that.
It's an area very problematic. There are a lot of people inside, young people, and there are parties inside, a lot of noises.
In the newspapers, the pictures about tourists drinking naked in the street. The neighbor of this area don't like the apartment touristic.
We've spoken to a lot of people about Airbnb in the city, and we've come across a lot of ambivalence. On the one hand, people acknowledge that rents are going up, prices are rising, that it's proving harder to live in certain areas of the city. But on the other hand, people have told us that the city really needs the cash tourists bring. This is a country that's still recovering from a very severe economic crisis, and tourists bringing money in is one way it might get out of it. In the final part of this programme, we'll look at how we can respond to these Silicon Valley values which are permeating the world. Barcelona's just one place where you can see how Silicon Valley is changing the way people live in places thousands of miles from California. And many in the valley are frustrated by the attempts of local authorities to hold them back. For them, cities and states have had their day. Investor Tim Draper, who we heard earlier praising the business environment in China, sees the future in unregulated individual entrepreneurship and a world of competing microstates.
I think government hinders us in a lot of ways. They get in the way of some of that job creation, and they do argue that they're doing things for the poor, but actually by focusing on the poor and the downtrodden, they are actually creating more poor and downtrodden. There are some interesting technologies in China today that are actually going to be more successful than the Silicon Valley ones because the regulators hadn't caught up to where the American regulators were. So the equivalent of an AngelList or a crowdfunder or a funders club here in the Silicon Valley in China can do so much more for their citizens and make so much more progress because they are unfettered by the regulatory environment. And that was one of the reasons that I promoted Six Californias, the idea of creating six new states that would have the fresh look at how to best govern.
And you're wearing a rather fine tie, which illustrates that. Do you want to talk us through this tie?
This is the Six California tie.
So we're seeing the state of California map, and there's six different coloured areas on it. Tell us through from the top to the bottom. What are we seeing
here? From the top, this is called Jefferson, and Jefferson is the far north, and they've been trying to secede from actually not just California, but the entire United States for quite a while. The next group is Sacramento and Marin County. That's North California.
Okay, and that's in purple there.
Yeah, and then the people who would probably benefit the most from something like this would be in Central California, where we have 20% unemployment.
Okay, this on your map, this is a big area, the biggest area.
It's the biggest area where it's the most inland, and it's very agrarian. Mm-hmm. They would benefit the most because what happens is companies get started in Silicon Valley.
This is the fourth region is Silicon Valley.
Fourth region is Silicon Valley. And then the other two regions are South California and West California.
And just before you go on, let's clarify here. This is dividing up the state into six states.
Yeah, similar to what was going to happen in the UK with Scotland. So the thinking was a company starts in the Silicon Valley, let's say Tesla. Tesla is looking to continue to build their manufacturing facilities in California. But they realize that it's so much better to create a facility in Nevada, which is where they ended up.
What, because of tax benefits? Why is that?
Regulations are very high
in California.
In California, and there were some good benefits to going to these other states because they're competing with California.
So you're saying, say, on your tie here, the red area, Central California, secedes, withdraws from the state of California, becomes a state in itself, it would be able to have, in your eye, better, lighter regulation, lower taxation, better working opportunities.
Or right, and they would have attracted the Tesla factory,
right, rather than the Tesla in Nevada or something.
And they would have attracted the Sony people and the Disney people who all moved to Louisiana, or the Occidental Petroleum people who all moved to Texas. You know, companies are moving to Singapore. Companies are moving to China. They're moving to other places from California, even though the innovation is still happening in the Silicon Valley.
Why can't California do this remaining unified?
Well, I believe that it needs a fresh start, and I believe that it's so big and so unwieldy that the government really can't do what it's trying to do. And I think we'd all be better off because the states would keep each other accountable and they would compete for us. And I think that's a really valuable thing. I think governments recognizing that they have to compete for their citizens makes it all work better. Just the way in a free market, businesses have to compete, and you know that you're eating better than you did 50 years ago, and you're driving better than you did 50 years ago, and you've certainly had better compute power, and you're communicating better. You've got better ways of moving around the planet. All these things are much better because the free market forced businesses to be accountable to their customers just the way a government is accountable to its citizens.
Okay, I'm taking your point, but I want to push you on it a little bit.
Go for it.
Could the same be said about the United States of America? It's too big, it's taken on too much to do, it's become inefficient. That's the country as a whole.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Should that be fragmenting? Should we see the end of the United States?
Well, there should be more internal competition. We used to have the Army, Navy, Marines, Air Force. They all sort of would compete to defend the country. Now it's just defense, and it's a monopoly, and it's big, and it's bloated, and it costs too much, and it's wasting money here, there, and everywhere. It would be much more efficient, much more effective if they were driven by innovations in technology, changes in the planet, changes in the need of defense, moving more into a defense from hackers than a defense from army tanks. I think the U.S. government could really benefit from feeling the heat of competition.
Looking ahead, would you like to see the whole world taking that chance, the whole world entrepreneurial like this region is?
Oh, absolutely. I think we'd have full employment. We'd have people who are happier. We'd have a society that moved much faster. Progress would move along much faster. We would cure many more diseases. We'd have much less poverty. We'd have more friends. We'd be better educated. All of these things would happen if we all became really driven entrepreneurs and always thinking about how can we improve the way our business works. Let's get the whole planet pushing to improve those things.
This is the Silicon Valley ethos in its purest form, and not everyone in the Valley would sign up to it. But it's widespread enough for others to be worried. Fred Turner, professor of communications at Stanford University, in the heart of Silicon Valley, thinks states actually need to be more assertive rather than less.
We talk about areas like Silicon Valley being focused on tech, New York being focused on finance, London being focused on finance. And you start to see these kind of regional hubs emerging at the center of industrial networks that have in fact gone global. That's super interesting. I think there's still an enormous role for the state, however, in protecting the interests of the inhabitants of London and the inhabitants of California and the inhabitants of New York who may not be members of those nodes. A sociologist named Manuel Castells talked a lot about something that he called the space of flows. And what he meant by that was the airports, the airlines, the airplanes, the cities through which elites moved. Elites moved in these kind of air-conditioned, glassed-in buildings, these towers, these airplanes. So they're moving city to city and never needing to quite look at who's down on the ground tending traffic. I think that's the work of the state.
I guess the state would come back and say, yeah, but to do this work, we need a bit of money, please. And one of the problems is collecting taxation from these global companies.
Collecting taxation from global companies is a challenge, but political leaders need to find the gumption to do it. They need to stop racing to the bottom and trying to find the lowest tax-denominated place for a company to locate so as to attract business. This is one of the powers, though, of Silicon Valley as a brand and a myth. If you manage to make other people believe that you own the future, that you can see the future, and that these institutions of government, now they're sort of backward and stodgy, then why should you be paying taxes? Shouldn't people just be doing what you suggest? That's a hideous ideology, and it's one that doesn't serve the social good. And it's the job of the state to push back. Now, political leaders are going to have to find some guts to do that with, but they're going to have to do it.
But maybe there's a third way. In Nairobi, a kind of Silicon Valley is emerging that combines Californian gumption with a particularly Kenyan identity. Sam Gishuru is a young entrepreneur and the CEO of Nilab, which helps local startups grow their businesses. He sees an opportunity to build a new kind of business environment, mashing up the best of America and Africa.
Nairobi is very entrepreneurial. I mean, everybody has a job, has something they do on the side.
Uh-huh.
We call it the hustling mentality. So everybody is running a business. Somebody works for a bank, they probably sell clothes on the side. Somebody works for the government, they probably do agriculture on the side. So it hasn't been difficult for us to tap into that. And so, yes, it's probably even more here than there is in Silicon Valley in terms of entrepreneurial culture.
But he's more nuanced about technology's ability to make the world a better place.
Technology will solve a lot of problems. It will not solve global problems. It will not solve all the problems. It will not necessarily solve the problem of hunger and education, literacy, and the problems of governance as well. But it will solve some problems, and those problems will give us a platform to be able to tackle these other challenges along the way in different ways.
And what about government? Are Kenyan entrepreneurs as opposed to regulation as their counterparts over in California?
I think we learn from watching the Silicon Valley a lot. Actually, we learn a lot just from paying attention to them. One, it would be true, government can actually be a hindrance to technology, to advancement in innovation. On the other hand, government here has been very adaptive to what we were doing. And you find that government is actually one of the biggest investors in the innovation space in this country.
Now, it feels to me that you're trying to build a Silicon Valley in Nairobi. In fact, you're succeeding in building a Silicon Valley in Nairobi. Are you copying the Californian Silicon Valley exactly, or are you making any changes to make a Kenyan version?
We're looking at everything. We're looking at California, we're looking at the Silicon Roundabout, we're looking at Berlin, we're looking at Amsterdam, we're looking at Israel, we're looking at all these places around the world, India. And we're trying to get the best practices to build Nairobi and to adopt them to the Nairobi environment.
Sarah, hi. Great to meet you. How are you doing?
Hi, thank you. So nice to meet you, too.
In fact, back in San Francisco, a new kind of company is emerging, one that believes in the transformative power of the internet, but also sees it as a way of redistributing some of the valley's enormous wealth. Among these is Premise, which pays people in the developing world to monitor the price of goods in their local shops, using a smartphone app that feeds the information back to Premise's computers. The data is then sold on to banks, corporations, governments and aid organisations. Premise's collectors typically earn between $80 and $100 a month, not always enough to live on, but in places like Brazil or Nigeria, certainly enough to make a significant difference to the family budget. Sarah Blask is Premise's Director of Communications.
I think that there are a class of companies in Silicon Valley who believe profoundly in having impact. I know that Premise is one of those companies. We are a company that thinks immensely about the human impact of what we do, thinking about helping decision makers who are making extremely high leverage decisions, people who are thinking about enormous populations of people and the pressures that they feel every single day. Do they have enough to eat? Do they have access to clean water? Do they have access to electricity? How long are the lines at the clinics down the road? say there's two ends of the funnel there, in the sense that we pay each contributor on our network. For some, it is their sole source of income, and for others, it's an important complement to their day-to-day income. So it has meaningful impact to people on the ground. There's always a person at the top of the pyramid, and there's always an enormous group of people at the bottom of the pyramid. And linking the top of the pyramid and the bottom of the pyramid together is technology, and in the future will also be technology.
Silicon Valley's shadow really does stretch across the globe. Not only are billions of us using products and services invented in this small corner of California, but we're also taking on the values that the Valley holds dear. Values such as individualism, entrepreneurialism, and a solid faith in the power of technology. And that is changing the way we live and work, our identities even. And it's even changing our relationship with cities and states. The Valley's vision for the world is a powerful one. But is their better world really just a better world for them? Whichever side we come down on, one thing is clear. This is our future we're talking about. Maybe it's time now for all of us to step up and choose what kind of default world we want to live in. In the street.